Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello, and welcome back to the Obesity Medicine Association's podcast, Obesity, a Disease. I'm your host, Dr. Allison Rhodes, and I'm excited to continue our series exploring how obesity impacts different areas of medicine. In our last episode, we talked about how obesity influences gynecologic health. Today, we'll take a deeper look at some of the biggest treatment challenges and advances in this field. We are joined again by Dr. Samson Payne today, Chair of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. Welcome back, Dr. Samson Payne.
Thank you, Dr. Rhodes, for having me back. I'm glad we're continuing this important conversation on obesity and women's health. More specifically, looking at some of those surgical challenges and advances in gynecological care today. These issues affect surgical safety, fertility, cancer risk, and ultimately long-term health. So I'm grateful that we're going to be taking the time to take a deeper dive.
And it's exciting that you do both obstetrics and gynecology. So share with us, what are some of the most common procedures patients with obesity undergo?
So as you mentioned, I am full spectrum. So I do still do the baby delivery, but I also do carry out gynecological surgeries and also specifically focus on obesity, lifestyle, and menopause midlife care. So in my practice, the most common procedures, as you would expect across any full spectrum, would be hysterectomies, cesarean deliveries. We're also performing minimally invasive surgeries, including laparoscopic procedures. These, although considered routine for a gynecologist, can definitely be more technically complex in patients living with obesity.
Can you describe what some of these complexities are and how these influence, you know, your counseling or decision making with patients?
Yeah, so obesity can certainly make the surgery more challenging. So specifically with a hysterectomy or a cesarean delivery, things like exposure, visualization can be a little harder, and operating times are often longer. The risks of bleeding, infection, and wound complications can also be higher. Minimally invasive approaches are still possible, but they require the proper equipment and experience. The biggest thing I say here is readiness. I often speak about OR readiness, making sure that you're communicating with your team. No different to how we drill everything else. We drill a hemorrhage, we drill a shoulder dystocia. Managing a patient with obesity is no different. We want to make sure that the team is aware and that we have all of the available equipment, but most importantly, that we're centering the patient in that care.
So it sounds like there are a number of factors that would affect the, you know, performing of the operation for the proceduralist, but are there any other things that you advise your patients on preoperatively, say in regards to anesthesia or, you know, in terms of what they can expect in their post-op course?
Yeah, so airway management, sleep apnea, and post-operative recovery are definitely more complex. And so the anesthesia risk is definitely going to be higher. And we mentioned previously wound healing can be slower. But it's not just about surgery, right? So it's the preparation beforehand. So screening, right? Screening for sleep apnea, controlling blood sugars, using blood clot prevention protocols can all reduce those complications. So these are important steps. They're just as important as what happens in the operating room.
Shifting gears a little bit to move out of the operating room and more again into the procedural space, how do you find obesity affects fertility treatments like ovulation induction or IVF?
Yeah, so obesity adds challenges in reproductive endocrinology. Ovulation induction, so that's where we provide medications to help boost the ovulation. We mentioned previously about those little tiny follicles and kind of giving those extra boosts. They can often require higher medication doses. IVF success rates can also be lower. Some clinics even impose BMI cutoffs, which also creates another barrier. Obesity doesn't mean infertility, but it can definitely make treatment less effective and more complicated. That's why individualized supportive care is so important. But I also kind of want to segue into the fact that we have to acknowledge that there's an equity issue here as well. So those BMI cutoffs can shut people out of fertility treatments altogether. It's a reminder that those barriers often amplify those personal struggles and that we need to work together towards more inclusive care models.
As we're thinking about providing this inclusive care, do you find that women, once they, you know, achieve pregnancy, face more recurrent pregnancy complications or even losses?
Yeah, so there's a higher risk for miscarriage, recurrent pregnancy loss and complications that we've mentioned previously, like gestational diabetes or preeclampsia. These are devastating, right? Both medically and emotionally. And our role is to manage the medical risks, but also to continue to provide support. I cared for a couple who experienced several miscarriages. By the time they had come to me, they were exhausted, discouraged, and felt like every visit elsewhere had ended with a message of it's just your weight. But when we did a thorough evaluation, we actually found a clotting disorder that hadn't been identified before. So with the right treatment plan, she went on to have a healthy pregnancy. So that, again, experience reminds me that weight may play a factor, but it shouldn't be the only lens. And so every patient, we should do that complete compassionate workup.
You spoke about some barriers that patients living with obesity face in terms of receiving compassionate or comprehensive care. Do you find that there are barriers for preventative care as well, for things like pap smears, pelvic exams, or things that might help for monitoring for endometrial hyperplasia or cancer?
Absolutely. So this is something that I see on a daily basis and hear stories from my patients about all the time. So equipment is not always sized appropriately. Patients may have had stigmatizing experience that keep them from coming back. As providers, we need to ensure that the exam tables, the gowns, the speculums fit all bodies, and that our language is respectful. On a daily basis, I hear these kind of stories, but one particular patient had avoided pap smears for nearly a decade after feeling humiliated when a gown didn't fit and the exam table was unstable. She only returned after developing abnormal bleeding. Thankfully, we were able to catch it early, but she said, if the clinic had felt welcoming, I would have come years ago. I mean, that story stays with me. So access and dignity aren't just comfort issues. They can be life-saving.
Thinking about access and dignity, I think one of the most inspiring parts of our field is the advances that we've made in terms of being able to truly help patients manage the chronic disease of obesity. We've seen new medications like GLP-1 receptor agonists helping individuals improve weight and metabolic health. Are you also seeing in your practice that these are improving either gynecologic outcomes like fertility or even just cycle regularity?
Yes, and it's one of the most exciting advances. GLP-1 receptor agonists are improving insulin resistance that can help regulate ovulation and cycles. We're seeing women with PCOS restore cycle regularity and improve fertility outcomes. I had one patient with PCOS that struggled for years with irregular cycles and infertility. After starting a GLP-1, she's gone ahead and conceived. Again, we had to observe the intervals, but something that she had never thought was possible, she's been able to manage with targeted lifestyle and the introduction of an AOM. So these medications aren't just changing lab numbers, they're changing people's life stories. And now we're seeing even newer therapies like the dual incretin medications that may offer even more benefit. The field is moving so fast, and it's very encouraging for reproductive health.
I imagine in a busy OBGYN practice, it might be hard to uptitrate a GLP-1 receptor agonist and provide a patient with the, you know, recommended lifestyle counseling that should go along with that. How do you see the optimal collaboration between obstetrics and gynecology, endocrinology, and obesity medicine playing in terms of a patient's long-term care plan?
Yeah, the collaboration is essential. Gynecological health is tied to metabolic health. OBGYNs need to work alongside our midwives, our endocrinologists, our obesity medicine specialists, nutritionists, dietitians, mental health providers. Patients, if we do that, not only have better outcomes, but also feel more supported. We really can't ignore that emotional piece. Many women with obesity enter those gynecological visits with fear of bias or dismissal. Again, by coming back to that psychological safety component, maybe the patients feel heard and respected. And it's just as important as that medical plan. To me, that's what real, true team-based care should look like.
How are surgical techniques evolving to be safer and more effective for patients living with obesity?
So minimally invasive surgery has advanced significantly. Robotic platforms allow for smaller incisions, less bleeding, faster recovery. Anesthesia protocols have also improved, so we have better airway tools and monitoring. These advances are helping us provide safer care regardless of body size.
If you could give your top three pieces of advice to women living with obesity who are considering pregnancy or surgery, what would they be?
Ooh, top three, eh? So I guess my main advice is don't delay care. So even small steps, so optimizing blood sugars, blood pressures, lifestyle, they can make a really big difference. I guess number two would be you deserve care that's respectful, safe, and tailored to you. So then that leads me into three is you should partner with a provider that will support you and not judge you.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Samson Payne.
Thank you again, Dr. Rhodes, for having me back. These are challenging topics, but also areas of tremendous opportunity. Supporting women with obesity isn't just about reducing surgical risks or improving fertility. It's about restoring dignity, expanding options, and improving long-term health.
Thank you again for sharing your expertise, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.